Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, coming at you with a very special guest today. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. I am not the special guest. I'm here every week. But celebrity media guest star Kane Pittman in the house today. Kane, say hello to your fans.
I'm not comfortable with celebrity, star, or any of those words.
Those are all accurate.
But I'm here.
Every word is
but
accurate.
I am here.
You are here. Kane, if you do not know him, he covers the Milwaukee Bucks along with Matt Velasquez. I am officially leaving Matt on the sidelines for this one, for one podcast only. So he's going to be jealous. You're going to have to deal with that. You know that, right?
Yeah, that was the one thing I was concerned about. Matt, you know, we talk about the rivalry we have, so hopefully
it's intense.
Hopefully he can move past this. But he's on the road for another few days, so
that's right.
It'll give him some time to cool down.
That's right. I never get to use the podcast studio, so that's an advantage for me. And if you don't know Kane, he writes for a lot of different places. You might see his work at Pick and Roll. Is that the Pick and Roll?
Yeah, Pick and Roll. Yeah.
Okay. Pick and Roll, which covers a lot of Australian basketball, a lot of NBA, I should say, NBA basketball involving Australian players. Kane himself, you may notice from the accent. Do you ever get into a conversation where somebody doesn't acknowledge, oh, you have an accent? Like, that must be pretty rare, right?
It happens, but I feel like they still give you a look. Like,
yeah.
You'll start talking, and I'll be like, oh.
You're foreign or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, they're like, oh, no. And then I'll be like, oh, you're English? No. No, I'm
sure you hear English all the time, but do you hear anything else? Do people say, like, are you from, like, Sweden or something?
Nah, I've had English. I've had Irish once.
Irish, okay.
But Australian. Well, Australian or New Zealand, they sort of put them in the same boat, which I feel like they speak, to me, I mean, I can tell very clearly.
Yeah, not
but,
me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But if somebody were to say New Zealand, I would actually be kind of impressed. Like, oh, that was your go-to.
Right,
that's an interesting go-to. So, yes, Kane works for a lot of different organizations. If you read The Ringer, like I do, love theringer.com, there was a big story last week written by Brian Curtis. He's one of their media guys, writing about not just Kane, but also Matt Velasquez and Eric Name, who writes for The Athletic, good friend of the program, although he hasn't been on the program yet. You've gotten the leg up on Eric Name.
Damn.
They were all sort of covered. They covered the coverage a little bit, talking about the three guys who follow around the Milwaukee Bucks, sort of a light media gaggle for the best team in the NBA. So wanted to bring Kane in here, talk a little bit about his life, but also we got to talk about the Bucks. Particularly, as much as I like you, the more important foreigner in my life is Giannis Antetokounmpo, and he is front and center right now. We've had two games since we last podcast, and he did not play against the Atlanta Hawks and went down with a scare the game before that against the Los Angeles Clippers. Kind of got everybody freaked out a little bit. The ankle thing for Giannis has been going on for a while now, and I know that everybody is very mindful of it. How concerned are you about the health of him? Because, you know, as an outsider, I'm kind of freaked out that this is if there's any chance Giannis can't play in the playoffs or misses time in the playoffs, I feel like it's a doomsday sentence. So how do you where's your head at on the ankle of Giannis?
Well, the problem with Giannis' ankle is that he never gives it time to fully recover because he's just a maniac who wants to play every single game. So I think not playing yesterday against Atlanta was a good thing. I think it would also be a good thing if he doesn't play tonight against the Nets. But he admitted it himself, and it's not something that he would normally talk about. But he said that it wasn't 100% after the game against the Clippers. He was not walking well in the locker room. He had a really heavy limp.
Right.
And, you know, it's something that clearly isn't at 100%. And while the Bucks have been pushing for the number one seed, I think that with the lead that they do have, you have to look. I mean, we were just talking about it. It's only a week and a half or thereabouts until game one. So there's not a lot of time to rest now, and you would hope that the Bucks can take care of business without him and get him through as, you know, in best shape possible.
We also talked about this beforehand, how great of a flex that would have been for Mike Budenholzer against his old team to go to Atlanta and win a game where Bonzi Colson has a double-double and Tim Frazier plays all 53 minutes and has a double-double and Sterling Brown is a stud and flirts with a double-double. Like, that would have been amazing with the lineup they had, sitting Giannis, sitting Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, obviously guys like Mirotic and Brogdon are out. That would have been incredible. As it stands, the Bucks go into Monday, go into the new week with the magic number of two, any combination of wins or two wins or Toronto losses with five games to play for each side will do it. obviously that's a it's pretty clear that I shouldn't say clear. It seems like that's going to happen. That's an eventuality. But the Milwaukee guy in me is like, am I sure? Because the Bucks have four playoff teams remaining out of five games. Toronto has a very weak schedule. I'm still like a little bit nervous about that. Is that insanity? Is that just crazy to think that Toronto still has a chance to get this number one overall seed?
Well, not really, because I think that even the thought of getting through the first round still seems,
for sure,
you know,
for sure.
It's something that's still a scary prospect, I guess, for Bucks fans. But just back to yesterday, I don't think that once Giannis obviously wasn't going to play, and then yeah, again, if Middleton has any soreness,
right?
You just can't risk that. At this point, playing Atlanta, you know.
Yeah, because they could have won that game with their backups. Almost did.
Exactly, and they nearly did. And that was sort of the way I looked at it, and I sort of said that on Twitter, that if Milton is not okay, then you may as well rest everyone, and then you would expect that they're probably going to play tonight. I don't know about Giannis, but Milton and Bledsoe anyway. From the sounds, it didn't sound like a serious injury. So I think that was Bud just playing the percentages and sort of backing, you know, those guys that did play, that they could still beat a team like Atlanta. And I mean, it took a pretty ridiculous Trae Young buzzer beater to beat them.
Insane.
Like, and that would have been a crazy win. As you said, Bonzi Collison, Tim Frazier, these guys that really haven't played at all, you know, to come in and win would have been, and they didn't know that was the role they were in. That's a big thing. Middleton's
really?
A late scratch.
I didn't even read that.
Yeah, so Middleton was warming up, had some soreness, so they pulled him. And then once they pulled him, Bud went to Bledsoe and said, "All right, well, you're not playing either because we're resting everyone." So,
sure.
You know, until, you know, sort of 45 minutes before the game, all those guys were expecting to play. So it was impressive.
I wonder what you think about the role of Sterling Brown long term. I mean, nothing against the other guys, like Tim Frazier, midseason signing. Maybe there's a role for him down the road. Bonzi Collison on a two-way contract. So I don't know how much long-term prospects there are for those guys. But Sterling Brown, obviously, being a draft pick and the job he's done this year, I've seen some mention as potential Brogdon insurance. If the Bucks can't re-sign Malcolm Brogdon, they might not miss a beat with him. I think that's probably overstating it a little bit because Brogdon's been so good. But what do you think about that? Like, Sterling Brown, could he be a... I guess there's a really good chance he could be a starter for this Bucks team next year.
Yeah, I think that... I thought as soon as, obviously, Brogdon went down, I thought that... I'm really high on Sterling Brown, first of all.
Yeah.
I really, really like Sterling Brown. I like everything he brings. And you mentioned Brogdon. It's hard for me to sit here and, you know, I feel like that might be overstating it now to say that he can just come in and replace Brogdon.
Right,
but,
yeah.
Because there's some things that Brogdon does so well, include, you know, getting to the rack. And we've seen a couple of times yesterday, Sterling Brown was sort of shut down with the ball as the primary ball handler.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of catch and shoot threes, he's shooting over 50% from the corners. He can, obviously, the buzzer beater, the go ahead.
Like,
go ahead. Exactly. The go ahead.
Thanks, bar. NBA, and your midcourt inbounds.
Exactly. But, you know, he was a guy that was the first time I've really seen him in pressure situations, and he came up big for this Bucks team. So, Sterling was straight away a guy that I thought was going to start through the playoffs. Yeah, until Brogdon comes back. I think that he brings a lot to the table that Malcolm does. So I think in some ways, if Malcolm's price was at a level that the Bucks weren't willing to pay, then I think they would feel pretty comfortable that Sterling Brown's a guy that can step in.
I mean, that's really interesting. It's hard to imagine that as good as Brogdon's been with all those percentages, but Sterling Brown has done nothing to disprove the idea that, and that's to me where the depth has been so impressive, is it shows that this team could still be really good next year, even if they lose a couple of these key pieces on the top half. And certainly Sterling Brown has shown that a little bit. I've asked this question of Matt a few times in various stages of the season, but to see Mike Budenholzer's team at work and knowing that last year they had some of these core pieces, and I don't want to keep dumping on Jason Kidd, but it just doesn't make sense to me how a coach can come in and transform a team from the seventh seed in the East with the same core into a powerhouse that is probably going to be the top overall seed in the NBA playoffs this year. Obviously, guys took a step forward. Brook Lopez or Ursan Ilyasova, those are new additions that add something. But you've seen Mike Budenholzer up close. I mean, does that shock you? Does that make sense to you? How can a guy do that? Is it really just this? Is he that good, Mike Budenholzer?
Well, the thing that I thought straight away when the Bucks signed Bud was that they were actually going to play basketball that fits 2019, which they just were not doing under Jason Kidd in terms of, you know, particularly offensively. You knew that they were going to shoot a bunch of threes. You knew that Bud designed the roster, and you, like, the guys he brought in with Lopez and Ursan, if you can't shoot threes, you're not playing for this team. Whereas last year, Jason Kidd starting, DeAndre Liggins and starting, Payton and all these guys. And so from that standpoint, straight away, you knew that this team, and they were already a top 10 offense playing that way. And so this is the thing that I always said with Jason Kidd's Bucks, is that they were winning games, and the fact that they're able to get to the playoffs and have a top 10 offense was based purely on individual talent. Right, mm-hmm. Giannis would get the ball and he would go to work. Middleton would get the ball and he would go to work. There was never they weren't running offense.
Right.
It was just guys playing isolation basketball and being talented enough to score. So now that they have an actual system which helps those guys get to the spots they need to,
yeah,
we've seen it. It's a lot of the times it's unstoppable. Like, they will miss some shots for sure, but it's rare that they can't get what they want.
Yeah,
because they're just so talented and the system's set up to benefit that.
We've talked a lot about NBA MVP with obviously Giannis and James Harden at the center of that. We haven't talked a lot about Coach of the Year. I don't really know if he would be the front runner. Certainly he's in the conversation. Is he the front runner in your mind for the Coach of the Year?
Coach of the Year is so difficult because, unlike the MVP, where people will look at the record and say, okay, well, that's, you know, yeah, that's why Giannis is probably the front runner. They've got the best record in the NBA. I feel like Coach of the Year, people like stories. So it might be, okay, well, Doc Rivers is coaching the Clippers.
For sure. Top four seed.
They trade away their all-star and then Tobias Harris, and then they still come back and are winning so many games and right in the mix.
Right.
So Doc Rivers is a guy that's a chance, and Michael Malone in Denver. So the Coach of the Year is tough, but I don't think that – I mean, this Bucks team hasn't had a season like this for 30 years, and by the time the regular season's done, it might be even longer than that, so – for mine, it's hard to look past Bud, in my opinion.
It's hard if a Denver team finishes number one in the West. Golden State, just like that, they have that spot on lockdown. If Denver wins the West, you've got to be like, oh, man, that took a special effort. And I know Doc Rivers has kind of had the narrative at this point. So it wouldn't surprise me to see Budenholzer not win that award. But like you said, it's hard to dispute what he's done. So I feel like it should be a lot of hardware. Defensive Player of the Year probably should come to Milwaukee too. While we're at it, let's just pile them on.
Yeah,
and maybe the NBA championship, you know, trophy would be nice too. Okay, so I do want to talk more about you and sort of how you've gotten here, but maybe just like looking back on this season, which is almost over. What are some two or three memories you think? What are the games that really should stand out this year? The moments that really are going to exemplify. I'm sure we'll remember this Bucks team by what they do in the playoffs, but what will exemplify the regular season to you? What really sticks out?
Well, I still think the best win they've had all year was earlier in the season in Denver on a back-to-back, so they lose to the Clippers the day before. And this is early in the season where it's funny when you think about it now, where we were talking about, well, the Bucks haven't lost back-to-back games, and that was back in November, I think late November, and they ended up going all the way through to late Feb. But that win for mine really proved to me, or proved to a lot of people, how competitive this group was. And they were talking before that moment, and you talk to Giannis and he would say, well, we just hate losing. Yeah. You're like, okay, but, you know, I mean...
it happens anyway.
It happens a lot for the Bucks. And that was the point where at the end of a road trip, a four-game road trip out west, where they would have had an excuse to lose. Denver were playing really well. Yeah. You go to altitude and they won on the road. And that was the game. Lopez had 8 threes.
That's right. So Splash Mountain was essentially born.
Exactly, Splash Mountain was born. And I asked Bud about that last week, whether he thought that that was a moment for him where he sort of sat back and realized that this group was potentially pretty special. And he never really likes to say, yes, that was a definitive moment.
He doesn't like narratives at all.
No.
He doesn't like comparing or surprises. He doesn't like talking about any of that stuff.
No, but he did. So for them, it was kind of surprising because he said, well, after the Clippers game, we did sit down as a group of coaches and players and have a talk and say that that game was not how we wanted to play. And he said, so walking away from that win in Denver, he had a feeling that, you know, that was a good sign that this group was competitive in that way. So that was the big one. Other wins in Toronto, I think the second time, because there was a lot of questions about the Bucks still at that point, and they went in there, they're up by 23 at one point in the third quarter, really blew the Raptors out at home on TNT as well. So I think that got them a lot of respect nationally. But, I mean, there's so many wins now, isn't there? I mean,
so many. And you go back and look through, I haven't done this, but look at their losses, how many of them have been games where you're like, oh, man, they maybe should have won that. Like the Clippers game is a good example. Oh, they lost pretty close to the buzzer. The Hawks game, pretty close to the buzzer. So many of these games are just missing. And, I mean, of course they are. If they're going to win that many games, the losses are going to be intense games too. But they just have been in every game. It's been really interesting to watch. So I promised I would get into your backstory a little bit. This is your first full season covering the Bucks, but you've visited Milwaukee a bunch of times. So I guess just like give me the origin story of your fandom of the Milwaukee Bucks, because I think the stereotypical thing would be like, oh, he's from Australia. He must have gotten into them when Andrew Bogut was the first overall pick in 2005 or whatever that was. But it actually predates that. So like give me a sense of how you came to the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, I always laugh about it because I don't think you could – well, this year you could actually, but I don't think you could say there's bandwagon Bucks fans.
No, there are not. That is a very light bandwagon until this year.
Well, yeah, exactly, until this year. But I did. The first Bucks game I watched, or the first NBA game I watched, was the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals run. They were in the playoffs.
Nice.
Ray Allen just went off. And you know, back then, I know a lot of people still picture him shooting threes and that sort of thing. But, I mean, he was dunking on people there and he was putting the ball on the floor. I was super young, I was only 11 or 12 years old, but I was like, wow, this guy's pretty damn cool. Like, I'm gonna follow him. So that's where I got on the Bucks. But I'm a big Bogut guy.
Excellent. Yeah,
he's
great.
Yeah, he's great. He had underrated time here in Milwaukee.
We were just talking about how much I feel like he wasn't appreciated because he was the number one draft pick and he didn't become a transcendent superstar. Injuries had something to do with that, but yeah, he was really, really solid. And I feel like Bucks fans just see him as a disappointment because he didn't, he wasn't Chris Paul in that same draft, So, which is too bad because he was great. But how big of a deal was Andrew Bogut then when you were growing up? Was he a nationally known guy that had gone to Utah? Was he? I mean, what was his? I guess what's the word I'm looking for? The profile in Australia?
Yeah. No, he was big because, back then when you think about Australian basketball players in the NBA, you had Luke Longley obviously won a couple of championships, but Bogut
offense. You should ask Paul Gasol about that. I've always wanted to.
you definitely have to, that could be the next podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get power. He's got time at the moment.
Of course he does. he is not playing at the moment.
So Bogut was. So going back to Longley, sorry, that was in the 90s, and obviously the media coverage wasn't as big as it was at the time when Bogut came through. So the Bucks actually, I feel like the Bucks probably have a decent following in Australia. I mean, I haven't met too many Bucks fans over my time, but when Bogut was in Milwaukee, there was a lot of Bucks games on TV back home, and they had I think Jim Paschke was doing Bucks TV or something Monday or something like that.
Jim Paschke's been doing Milwaukee sports since the 80s, man.
He had a half an hour show though, where he would interview. Anyway, and it was on like prime time in Australia, 7 o'clock every Monday, Bucks TV. So
no way.
I actually haven't spoken to him.
Jim Paschke's a big deal in Australia. That's incredible.
I actually haven't spoken to him about that. I need to ask him about that and see whether he knows that he was going in prime time in Australia. So
he has no idea that he is also an international media celebrity.
Yeah, I don't know why I just thought of that, but yeah, I'm gonna have to let him know.
That'd be really cool. Yeah. That's really funny. Jim Paschke, you brought me to the Bucks, kind of.
Yeah.
And so you decided to make a couple trips over to check them out, is my understanding. And then, so you're able to watch every game, right? You're able to watch every game that the Bucks play over in Australia, right?
Yeah, I would get league pass. So when I was old enough to afford my own league pass, I bought that. So before that, I listened to Ted Davis. So I tell him that. I'm like, Ted, I used to like listen to you when I couldn't afford a league pass.
And how about
I
was, that?
Yeah. So all these guys now that obviously you work with and speak to, it's kind of funny that you're like, yeah, I was like 14 in Australia, like listening to you guys. You're still around. But so I once I got league pass, I haven't missed maybe I've only missed a handful of Bucks games in the last sort of 15 years or something like that.
Incredible.
So, yeah.
I feel like
I've been through the real pain.
Yeah, of course. You're as deep a fan as anybody in Milwaukee, man. 15 years, that's a long time coming off of that 2001 team. It's been a drought, as I'm sure you know. So you're 27 years old now, right?
28 years old.
And then at some point, I want to get to your decision to come to Milwaukee to actually try to cover the team. Tell me what you did in Australia. You have a very fascinating job. You had a fascinating job in Australia.
Yeah, so I finished high school when I was 18, and I went. So all my friends were, going to college or university in Australia or maybe having a year off and traveling and that sort of stuff. I had about a week off after high school, and then I started an apprenticeship in a workshop up in Melbourne. So I was driving. My commute was around 2 hours a day.
Oh my gosh!
I was getting paid like maybe $150 a week, I think, working full time. So I did an apprenticeship back there to get qualified. So I'm a qualified fitter and turner, which is I guess you could say it's a type of mechanic, I guess.
Okay.
No, I wasn't working on cars. I was working on sort of heavy machinery. So I did that. So I worked up in Melbourne doing that apprenticeship for 4 years, and then I came down and worked at a oil refinery close to where I live. So before I went to the oil refinery, I was doing fly in, fly out work. I was out in the gas fields in the desert in the middle of Australia working out there. And so that's basically it's an alternative route to where I am now, I'll say.
The stereotypical thing about Australia is that the wildlife, every animal can kill you pretty much. They're all very deadly. So what's the bigger issue there? Actually working in an oil refinery or being surrounded by wildlife? What is a greater risk to your life?
Well,
I'm sure it's the oil, but just assure me here.
Well, the oil refinery was, I ran into my fair share of snakes out on the plant.
No,
so
oh
it's like
gosh.
A, it's like both, I guess. I mean, there's a double-edged sword.
Oh,
you gotta be careful.
Oh my gosh, I'd be so freaked out. I don't even like, you know, dogs, man, let alone like reptiles or anything.
So
like
I was out in the desert. So I was right out there in North Queensland working, and I didn't see too many, which is kind of crazy. I was in the desert, so you knew that there was stuff out there, but there was one time I was having a coffee or whatever. I was in the, I mean, it was hot, it was really really hot out there. It was like 120 degrees or something like that. So I was having a coffee, like sitting in this air-conditioned room, and then I opened the door, and on the actual doormat was like a curled up like brown snake. It was like super deadly, like I sort of like had my foot above, I was about to stand on it, then look down, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna close the door and just like take a bit of a longer break here. I'm like, all right,
awesome.
Yeah,
that's terrifying.
Are you you're coming to Australia now?
Absolutely not. Your tourism posters do nothing for me. I know the truth. No brown snakes for this guy. At what point did you, the one nice thing about this job is you're able to make enough to fly to Milwaukee occasionally and make some friends, see the Bucks. At what point did you decide, you know, I kind of want to try this, like try the path that you're taking? I want to try to like stay here for a prolonged period of time and even try to get into the media business. Like where did that plan come from?
Yeah, so I always sort of, I mean, this was always something that I wanted to do even when I was back in high school, but it just came to the point where once I finished high school, I was like, all right, I'm done with school. I want to just go to work and do things with my hands or whatever. So that's the path I went down. And then you get to a point where I probably thought, well, I've missed that boat. I'm not going to go back and go down that path anymore. But the pick and roll I reached out to them and I was like, hey, I'm interested in writing. Like I would do some writing myself. I wouldn't like, no one would see it, but I'd just be like, hey, well, could I do this?
It's like how freelance works. You pitch it.
For sure. And then so they were really supportive to it. They're like, yeah, we would love to have you on board. We'd love to have another guy covering the NBA. I'm like, all right, that sounds good. And it wasn't a paid thing. It was just a hobby, I guess. I had bigger plans, but like that's all it was. I wasn't getting paid for it.
Sure.
So I would work at the refinery, and we would work 12, 13-hour shifts. It was shift work. That's how the roster was set up. So if I was working a night shift and things got quiet at night and we did all the work we needed to do, it'd be about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be like, all right, I'm going to write for 5 hours. So I'd write from 1 till 6, get through the night shift, go home, sleep. And that's where I basically would get my work done and try and improve and learn some stuff and have discussions with my editor there, who would help me a lot. So that's basically where I started writing when I was at work or in my spare time. That's how I would get stuff done.
So I'm completely self-taught. You didn't take classes or anything. This was just a hobby, you know, started as, I guess, what you'd call a hobby. And
that's basically it. There's no other way to put it. So I still, like I said to you, I'm still improving. I got a lot of work to do, but it's I've been lucky to have some people help me out and really take an interest in what I'm doing and help me to improve, which I think, you know, you need to be lucky a little bit.
Yeah, but the goal here is to get you to do this full time. The goal is to latch on somewhere, right? So, essentially, I think even the Ringer article sort of framed it as an audition. Like you're sort of paying your way through an audition. Is that kind of how you look at it? You're sort of auditioning for people?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, from Australia, if I want to cover the NBA, so I was flying over and I was doing some media stuff last year. I think I did 4 or 5 Bucks games, but if you're not around, then
it's hard to tell the stories.
Yeah, and you know what it's like, the players.
Yeah.
If you're around all the time, it's a completely different environment around the team. They know who you are. It's easier to, you know, talk to people, or they will talk to you. So I was at the point where it wasn't going to happen for me if I stayed in Australia. So I had to like sort of weigh up in my mind whether how much do I want to do this? Is this worth quitting your job and just moving over there and having no guarantee? And after a long period of thinking about it, sure. I just did it.
How did you get credentialed even for those first few games? And then, I mean, you have to know you're going to get a season credential before you fly over here to try to live here. So how did that process work?
Yeah, I didn't know that either. So
really?
I did not know that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What a risk. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I obviously with the pick and roll, I was in contact. So for international media, it's a little bit different to the locals here. You have to apply for every game that you go to individually, and then you either be approved or denied. So even now, that's what I'm still working through. Now,
really?
Obviously, I have got a season credential now with the Bucks.
For
the home games, yeah. But for the road, it's still, I mean, you could get denied, which is kind of difficult because if I'm trying to book travel.
Yeah, you need to know that you're going somewhere for a purpose.
Exactly. So that makes it a little bit difficult. But as far as the Bucks, I showed up and Dan Smicek said hello, and he's like, oh, you're back again for a couple of weeks. And I'm like, well, I'm actually here for the whole season. And he was sort of like shocked by that. He's like, what do you mean?
Sure.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm just like hanging around. And then straight away he's like, oh, we'll sort you out, and you know, gave me the season credential or whatever. So obviously he's been really good for me, and I guess it helped that I sort of knew the people anyway from last season. But yeah the Bucks have it, like I always say, I feel like it would be a different experience if I was in another city. They've been pretty good.
Yeah, it also probably helps that the Bucks haven't, they don't need to have a strict, I mean, not that they don't have a strict media policy, but like it's not New York. They don't have to reject anybody, so that's got to be helpful. How many road games have you been to this year?
I think I don't know the exact number of road games, but I think I've been to like all up total games. I think I've been to low 50s. So
oh wow, okay.
I probably missed 20 odd games, and so as the season's gone on, I've gone to probably less road games as the Bucks as you can sort of predict. Like yesterday's game,
sure.
I know whatever it turned out, and they lost. But when you look at the schedule,
no,
you're like, do I need to go to Atlanta? Probably not. That's money I can save for the playoffs.
Sure.
So
yeah,
that's basically how I've worked it. If there was a legitimate reason for me to go to a game, and I thought there was a story I could sell back to Australia or something like that,
right,
I would go. But if not, I've been eyeing off the playoffs for a while.
Yeah, so I didn't even unpack exactly how then, like, you have relationships with a couple newspapers in Australia that they will take your work sometimes. The pick and roll thing is all unpaid.
Yeah.
Is it just those newspapers? Are you able to coordinate anything with American papers or
no? So this is the other difficult thing, which is why I guess maybe audition is a good word, because I can't with my visa, I would need to, if someone wants to hire me, they need to offer me a job. And then I need to go home to Australia, change my visa status, and come back. So
you can't actually freelance. I get this.
Yeah, I can't. Not in America. I can in Australia.
Uh-huh.
To Australian companies, which I have. I've had some stuff with the Herald Sun and some stuff with ESPN back home, but not. So just for instance, if Matt wasn't there and Journal Sun were like, hey, do you want to write a game story for us? I could say, sure, I can do it. But you can't.
You can't pay me.
Exactly, which again, then is, you know, not something.
Yeah.
It's not a path you want to go down.
You don't want an unpaid internship in the middle of all this.
Sure.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. That's just the way that makes perfect sense. It's just,
yeah,
man, you can't even make money off of it.
They don't make it easy for you.
Yeah, and then I'm sure it's not easy to get paid. I'm sure you don't get paid all that quickly. You write a story, and then, you know, you've got to, I mean, it takes a while anyway. It takes a month sometimes, and then you've got to get the check mailed to you, so that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, it's,
well,
I mean,
it's not a direct deposit, but
it's, I think the whole, it's been an experience, I'll say that, the whole freelancing thing. And it's hard because you have a story and you might think it's a good story and you'll send an email out and you just won't get a response at all.
Right.
Because that's the way it works. They'll either respond to you if they want it, and
it's
they'll respond
silence.
Quickly. And if they don't want it, you just won't hear anything. And then maybe a few weeks later, you've got another story and email them. And then all of a sudden, they're like, yeah, we really want that. Like, they don't email back and say, no, we're not really interested. You just don't hear anything.
Yeah.
So it's kind of brutal.
As someone who has been a sports director before, I kind of can relate to that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just like, I don't know what to say. It's hard to say, yeah, we're not interested. It's hard to tell somebody that.
Yeah.
So I think it's much easier to be like, let me sit on it and
then
not actually come back to it.
Yeah.
That's usually how I justified it in my head. So So I apologize on behalf of those people because I kind of know what they're thinking. I think one of my favorite moments from you this year was when you got into a little tete-a-tete, very good-natured with Greg Popovich, because you asked about Patty Mills, right, in San Antonio, and he's like, it wouldn't have anything to do with your accent, would it?
Yeah.
He recognized Patty Mills, of course, being Australian. What's it like talking to a guy like that? I mean, you're Greg Popovich is intimidating. I would be intimidated by him, and I know he's a good guy, but, you know, you're talking to some of the biggest celebrities in the sport, and that's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah. So I knew what I was going to ask before I went there. Obviously, I had a Patty Mills question, and probably more so than other situations, I went in prepared for what could potentially happen. And I'd already decided in my head that if he said something back, or that I was just going to like keep pushing, because I think I understand why people would just like freeze up or not say anything back, because he is like, it's Pop, right?
Right.
And he's destroyed a lot of like media people. So
with decent questions sometimes.
Yeah.
But he does not suffer fools. He is not interested in meaningless questions.
Yeah, exactly. So I had a lot of people that were like, man, that was crazy that you did. And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm like, he was sort of also smiling at me. Like it was good natured. Like,
yeah.
He wasn't being rude. I had some people sort of like tweet at me after that and say, oh man, like, don't worry about him. He's, you know,
right.
He's a bad guy. And I was like, listen, he was smiling. It was all good natured. He wasn't being rude at all, but I'm sure if I didn't say something back, he would have also been happy not to answer the question.
Yeah, no doubt. He would definitely have told you that too. He does not care where you're from, what exactly. Accent you have. He will tell you what he thinks about it.
Yeah.
Well, what's caught you by surprise as you've been on this beat? Even for, it could be just from a cultural standpoint, but I mean, you've had enough experience with the United States that I imagine nothing really that way has caught you off guard. But what has been something you weren't prepared for or didn't expect?
I think just in general is. And it seems like a silly thing to say because you watch basketball and you understand the schedule and how you know, many games there are. But from covering games and going on a couple of road trips where, you know, I mean, the travel like gets you. It's like it's hard. It's tough. And I never complain about it. So anytime I feel like if I say negative things, people are like, well, you know, you're going to NBA games, which of course
nobody
which
wants
is,
to hear it.
Which is awesome, and it's like the best. And when you're at the games, it's great. But it's for someone that hasn't traveled like that, in terms of we were in on the West Coast trip the other week, and it was like a 6 a.m. flight to LA. The next day was a 6 a.m. flight to Utah. Then a 6 a.m. flight to Phoenix the next day. All while not getting back to the hotel room until 2 o'clock after the game. So I think not so much for myself, but when I think about that travel and then think about the players and how they get up to play a game the next day, I guess that's the thing that I'm most impressed with is how the players and guys like Giannis, who's having just this ridiculous season, can keep doing that like game after game and really not have a bad night at all. So that's been the big thing, I guess, just being with the team and the travel and seeing how they're able to look after themselves and still, I mean, for the Bucks, not have many nights off.
Right. Yeah, it's different. I mean, NHL's like this too, but like in football, you only have to travel one place a week. In baseball, you travel, you stay there for 3 days. So in NBA, you're in Atlanta one night, you're in Brooklyn the next night, you're back home the next night. That's insane. That's crazy. I don't know how these players even win on the road. Like, that's nuts. But for the average human, it would knock you down. But they're obviously world-class athletes. Maybe that doesn't work for people like us covering the team. So I did ask you this kind of off mic too, because we've seen – as good as the Bucks have been, sometimes fans get a little, you know, they get excited, they get frustrated quickly. Things go wrong. It's the first sign of doom. And specifically, I was thinking about Chris Middleton, who's been vilified a little bit this year, as good of a season as he's had, and yet there's plenty of, you know, fan feedback out there that suggests that they should move on from him or that he isn't as good as they'd like him to be. I guess just comparing fandom here to what you've seen in Australia. Is it that crazy? Is it that crazy back home too? Because I feel like that's a uniquely American thing, and I might be wrong. I don't know. I don't think it's a unique thing to Milwaukee, but it seems like as social media has gotten bigger and better, I mean, you could cliche that all you want. There is just this like immediate rush to panic. Do you see that in Australia too, or are people a little more relaxed?
Yeah. So I don't have people talking to me about the Bucks or the NBA like I do, I guess, the locals here.
Sure.
It's a different. It's a different experience for me personally, but in terms of Australian fans on online in Australia, it's the same. Like, people are super passionate, and you know, the internet's a fair platform to voice your displeasure. So it's the same. I think it's the same everywhere. I think there's a lot of similarities between Australia and America in general, but yeah, in terms of fans and fan interaction on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it might be, it's very similar back there. And there's, I think with all sports teams, there's always a player or two that sort of polarize the fan base.
For sure, always.
And a lot of the times they're good players that may be underappreciated, but it's very, very similar.
Michael Redd was the big one here.
Right.
Just local radio guy always said the best player on a bad team is always blamed for not being better. And I feel like that was always Michael Redd. Andrew Bogut to a degree, too. When, you know, the Bucks had some lean years. Those guys were not appreciated as well as they probably could. Michael Redd was a second-round pick. He didn't even have that draft thing hovering over his head. But I do feel like Chris Middleton gets short shrift a little bit. You know, we've made it this deep. What are we at? 35 minutes or so into this podcast. I've not said the name Matthew Dellavedova. I'm proud of myself for that. You've got to be asked about him all the time. Now, the Bucks had two players with Australian connections, Deli and Thon Maker, of course, and those guys have both left the team in trades, and I'm sure people have asked over and over, oh, man, does it stink now that your guys are gone? You know, I'm sure they assume that that's all you care about when, you know, we know better, but how often do you get asked about Matthew Dellavedova?
Pretty regularly.
Yeah, like every day, right?
Yeah, but, you know, the thing that I always say when I'm trying to explain why it was, I mean, it sucked, first of all, because, so I say that it was cool to have Australians around. So, like, it was cool to have Dally around because before the game we could sort of talk about whatever. We could just talk about home or, you know, Australian football or whatever, and it was cool. So he was cool to have around. But I always came here with the intention to be an NBA reporter.
Right.
So there was a number of factors why I came here, and the fact that there was two Australians there and I could write for the Pick and Roll and get credentialed through them and have a legitimate reason to be here was good. So when they left, it did make things complicated, but I would never wanted to come over here and just be a guy covering the Australian players. Right. That's not what it was about. It was about covering the Bucks and the team in general. So there was definitely never any consideration of leaving, but Dally left so early in the season that the relationship wasn't there, I guess, like it was with Thon. Like, he was cool to have around. He was obviously such a nice person.
He doesn't get identified as an Australian, even though he is. So it's sort of, I guess that's why I said Dally first.
Yeah.
Yeah, Thon especially.
Well, he was just around so much longer, and he would always, he was funny. Like, in the locker room, we'd get after the game, and most of the time the players would get changed and shower, and then they'll talk to whoever. But he would, like, see me walk in, and he'd be like, come on. He'd be like, let's do it. He's like, what do you want to know? And we would talk, and then so we would, like, joke around with each other. He was just a super nice, but, like, you can understand why he was such a favorite in the locker room. And I spoke to a few people in Detroit, and they said that he's the exact same there. The team loves him, the fan loves him, because he's just such a nice person.
Such an international sport, made this comment before, that maybe that makes it easier for an international reporter, because these guys, like Giannis, guys from Europe, guys from, you know, all over the map, they're not going to hear, they hear that as just one more accent. It's not like, oh, that's weird, an Australian in America. It's just, whoops, it's that everybody is sort of, I mean, everybody's sort of from some foreign country, right?
Yeah, it was funny when you said that, because I didn't think about that. So when we were talking earlier, JR asked me about my accent and whether people, you know, struggled to understand.
I'm the only person who asked you about your accent in a long time.
Well, we got tacos, all right? So we got tacos before the podcast, and the server, I mean, it was Monday.
Oh, man, the server could not handle the accent.
If he's listening.
We won't identify the restaurant, and definitely not the dude. I don't even know the dude's name, but he could not understand a word you were saying.
Yeah, he came back three times to, like, double check that. And this was after I was actually pointing to the items on the menu.
You were. I saw you do that. Like, I want this taco and this taco. Yeah. And he definitely, just write it down, servers. I know that people have said this a lot. Just write it down. He really struggled.
He was struggling. But that was something that I always think about. Like, if I'm talking to, whether it's on radio or, I mean, I don't know how clearly I'm talking in this.
You sound great. The levels are great.
But, you know, when I'm asking questions to players that aren't used to having me around, I do think about that. I'm like, well, just slow it down a little bit and talk clearly, because I guess I'm used to doing that around people here, but maybe you're right. I guess around the players, it's probably not as a big a deal.
That's tricky, though. That's a very underrated. When I get into a big group and I'm asking a question, I'm very cognizant that everyone's listening to my question, possibly even on TV or radio if there's microphones there. I talk faster, you know?
Right.
And on top of all of that, you're talking to a professional athlete. You don't, very cognizant not to waste their time or ask a stupid question. And it's super easy for me to just start blah, 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 going a mile a minute. So that's interesting that you have to be aware of how it sounds. And I don't know. That's tough. That's interesting. So what is your plan? What's your schedule going forward? You're going to be here through the postseason. And then let's say, you know, let's say somebody wants to offer you a job. And then I guess let's say somebody doesn't. Like, are you just going to go home to Australia and hope for the best in the latter case? And in the former case, my understanding is you got to go home for a little bit, right, to get the proper work credentials, right?
Yeah, basically, I sort of feel there's two ways it's going to go at the, you know, as we sit. It'll be I either would get an employment offer from someone that wanted me to,
yeah,
I guess, keep going with this basketball stuff, and in that case, I would have to go home to Australia and change my visa status and come back so then I can get paid, mm-hmm, by an American company. But the other option would be if nothing does come up, which obviously is a possibility, then I've been here for that. In the end, I would have been here for 7 months, I think, seven, maybe 8 months if the Bucks, yeah, go as far as what we hope.
Oh, it's going to go to June, Frank.
Exactly.
Going until June.
So 8 months without really a paycheck coming in. So it would probably... as much as I want to be here in summer. There's, you know, I've got through the winter. I want some warm weather. But
yeah, that's unfair.
I would probably, my intention would be to come back next year and do it again. So I would have to go home and
get some money.
Yeah, get some money and come back. So it's still up in the air. It's probably coming up quicker than I've really had time to think about.
Sure.
I'm like, well, the playoffs are here, and then, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. So
right, it could be over.
Exactly. So we'll see. It's been up in the air from the start, but I guess it still is. Yeah.
What do your friends say back home when they, you know, when they hear you're going to America to cover a basketball team? What do they think about that?
They're it's funny. They've actually been really good. They read all my stuff and they like listen to the podcast.
That's great.
And yeah,
they're listening to this one. Thanks for listening.
I'm sure they will listen to this one. So they're super supportive, and I had a couple of friends come over for New Year's and they went to a couple of games of Fireserve, and they're all basketball fans anyway, so
yeah.
So they're into it, and yeah, they've been pretty good. They do ask if I'm coming home or when I'm coming home, though. So
yeah,
they'll be happy if I come back, even for a couple of weeks.
Well, you're gonna have to go back for a couple weeks, and hopefully you're right back here, because I know you're really good at this. So hey, man, appreciate it. Thanks for filling in. It's a pleasure to have somebody other than Matt Velasquez. No offense to Matt Velasquez, who is a fine podcast partner, but it's nice to have somebody else. We'll mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, and again, Matt, if you know, I know you're busy on the road right now, but if you do listen, don't hold it against me.
Yeah, he hates you, I'm pretty sure now.
I can, you know, I'll get him lunch on the road in the playoffs, and maybe I can buy him back.
Everything can be solved with a purchased meal, don't you?
Exactly.
Thanks for listening to the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Check out Kane Pittman wherever you can find him. Certainly theringer.com, the awesome article on him and Matt and Eric Name is a really fun read. And then check out the Pick and Roll. There's a lot of fun stuff there. Even if you're not into Australian basketball per se, there's a lot of cool stories there. I think you might be surprised the number of Australians that are currently in the NBA. A lot of pretty top flight players. So check that out. And hey, give Kane Pittman a job. If you are in position to give Kane Pittman a job, we want to keep him in the Milwaukee market. So find this podcast, hopefully you already did, at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Rate us, review us. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. Where are you on Twitter? You're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. You can search your name, Kane Pittman. The handle is MKE Bucks AUS,
Very appropriate.
Yes, it was like an anonymous account originally.
Really?
Well, because that was a plan, because I didn't want to like share my writing because I wasn't that confident. And then in the end, within a couple of months, I was here covering games. I'm like, well, that doesn't work.
Right?
Like,
no, that's true.
So I probably should change it. But that's where we're at.
No, I like it. At first, I thought it was Buck Sauce. That's some inside thing. Wait, other people think that too?
Yeah, they're like Buck Sausage, Buck Sauce.
Oh my gosh, everyone is stupid as me. That's fantastic. Like, this is not a complicated puzzle. Great. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition. We will be back at you with Matt Velasquez next week. Hopefully we'll be talking about the top seed in the East, confirmed at that point. As it stands again heading into Monday, it's magic numbers 2, Bucks taking on Brooklyn, in Brooklyn, taking on the Nets on Monday night. Look to lower that number. Maybe the Raptors will lose on the same night and the Bucks will have it clinched by the time you're listening to this podcast. But thanks for tuning in. We'll chat with you again next week.